Welcome in, Hokies fans, to this edition of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We record on Wednesday, November 3rd, as Virginia Tech gets set for a short week and a trip up to Boston College to face the Eagles. On episode 205 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, we'll go through the Eagles and how they've struggled over their last couple of weeks without their starting quarterback, Phil Jurkovec, the impact on a short week on both teams, and how the Hokies can keep the momentum from their win down in Atlanta going this week. All that and much more coming up on episode 205 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, which starts right now. We welcome you in, however you are taking in this edition of the Tech Sideline Podcast, whether that's SoundCloud, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts, or if you were on the YouTube. If you're watching archived on YouTube, be sure to give us a like, comment, and subscribe to the Tech Sideline YouTube channel. If you are live in the YouTube, make sure to drop a comment or question in the chat for Will and Chris, and we'll get to those with Katie at the end of the show. As always, the Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. You can help bring Olympic hopeful athletes to Blacksburg and one of the best and fastest growing wrestling programs in the country. Be sure to go to southeastrtc.com to learn more and donate today. I'm your host, Jake Lyman. We've got our usual crew back on set. Will Stewart, founder and general manager of Tech Sideline across the way. Chris Coleman, lead analyst and columnist for Tech Sideline, back in his usual spot. In the fourth chair today, it's Katie Adams. We'll have her usual segment in the middle of the show, and then she'll get to your YouTube questions at the end. Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes, the best podcast producer in the land. We are back ready for Boston College on Friday, but as always, we have to do our Braves check-in. The Atlanta Braves are World Series champions.
It's a great time down there. The best way I can describe it is like going to a World Series at the Battery is like if College Game Day was set up on Bourbon Street. A more upscale Bourbon Street. And like the stadium and the game was right next door. It was insane. It was the best atmosphere I've ever been in for any sport. So definitely worth it all.
So for people that don't know, you got the stadium and then you got that whole area around it. Yeah. Did I hear the TV commentators say there were probably 150,000 people in the area?
It wouldn't shock me with probably 45,000 in the stadium.
Yeah.
And like the line to get into bars on Saturday was hours long. So I had to hang out outside all day.
Now, were you allowed to bring your own? Like, could you wheel a cooler up if you were just hanging out in the area?
Well, I don't know, to be honest. You probably could if you wanted to. Didn't have tickets to the game and you were just going to watch it on the big screen outdoors. The Battery was the best-kept secret in baseball until the World Series. Uh-huh. And it's the absolutely best atmosphere anywhere you can go see a game in baseball right now because it's just a party atmosphere around the stadium the whole time.
Well, they were showing it, I want to say, heading into the ninth inning last night and just people going crazy. They had people in the outfield at Truist Field that were just going crazy. It looked like a great atmosphere.
It was fantastic. I was it was always the number one item on my bucket list. But, you know, it's not something you can do until it happens. So when it happened, I was like, yep, I'm going. It doesn't matter how much it costs.
Well, yeah, people are like, it's the middle of football season. Why are you allowing Chris to go to the World Series? Did you say they hadn't even been to the playoffs in a long time?
Oh, no, they go to the playoffs every year.
Okay.
They hadn't been to a World Series since 99, and they hadn't won one since 95.
So of course I'm going to let him go.
I missed a Georgia Tech game that nobody's going to remember 10 years from now anyway. It's not a big deal.
True.
well, you did get to see two wins while you were down there on Friday and Saturday. How'd you take in the game last night, the clincher?
I went to PK's last night, and I didn't, after being there at those games, it was kind of hard for me to sit around and watch them by myself, so I did go out last night.
It was a good game. 7-0 win for the Braves. Again, like Chris mentioned, first World Series since 1995. But we are talking about football, Virginia Tech football, up to Boston this weekend to face the Boston College Eagles. And this is a team that kind of just a lot of hope going into the season, started 4-0, but lose their starting quarterback and now have lost their first four ACC games.
Yeah. If you look at their season and the trajectory of their season. Now, granted, they started out with a couple of cream puffs. They beat Colgate 51-0 at home. They traveled to UMass, which I find odd, and UMass is one of the worst teams in the country.
It's
got to
be a two-for-one deal.
Yeah, and they beat them 45-28. Then they traveled to Temple, beat Temple 28-3. and then beat Missouri 41-34 in overtime at home. So at that point, they're 4-0, and Alumni Stadium, I think it's called, holds 44,500 people. And they're not known for great fan support, but for that Missouri game, they had 44,500 people. So things were very kind of trending in the right direction then. And I don't remember exactly at what point Phil Jurkovec got
hurt. I was in the UMass game, which actually made the Missouri result, considering everything we know now, shocking that they were able to win that game with their backup quarterback. And we'll get into this later, but he is not a good player at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I want to say that that NC State game the next week was sold out too. That I believe that was a pretty rocking atmosphere, and then they got blown out hammered. That game.
It was 40,349 the official attendance is what it says here. So for Boston College,
first of all, they lost to Clemson 19-13.
And that was a really good game. Really, really good game. Yeah. BC had the ball at the end and fumbled a snap while they were driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that was when Clemson was still at least considered as decent at that point.
Yeah. Clemson's one of those teams where, like, all their games are going to be within 10 points.
Low scoring, you know? And close. Yeah.
Nobody's scoring over 30, but it's I believe they've had – we mentioned Georgia Tech was 14-8 and 19-13 in that one. Yeah. So everybody playing the Tigers close this year. But we mentioned Phil Jurkovec. He has been very good since going to Boston College. 20 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions, almost 3,000 yards in the limited amount of time he's been there. Him going down is pretty much doomed this season. Dennis Grossell, redshirt senior, steps in, and he has just not been all that good.
I would say that Jurkovec going to Boston College severely impacted
Notre Dame season as well.
I remember we were talking earlier this year about how Notre Dame doesn't have a quarterback, and I thought to myself, I never did say it on the podcast, I thought, well, they've got a quarterback. He's just playing for Boston College.
I think I said it before Notre Dame podcast. Yeah, yeah, if Jurkovec was healthy and still at Notre Dame. Granted, you know, they're still, what, 7-1 or whatever, but they might be.
But they're 7-1 or 8-0 with a bullet now. Who did they lose to? I don't remember.
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And that game was close.
Right. And yeah, exactly. And
all right, sorry to interrupt.
What was the question?
Dennis Grossell stepping in.
Grossell. Okay, yeah. So Jurkovec got hurt late last year and missed a game. He missed the UVA game. Grossell comes in and throws for 520 yards on UVA, and you're like, man, look at that quarterback depth the Boston College has. Well, as it turns out, as we know now, UVA's defense is just absolutely putrid and horrendous and whatever other word you can look up to and the thesaurus, but they're awful. And now you get them up against, you know, normal teams. Now, granted, you know, Clemson, NC State, Syracuse all have, you know, highly ranked defenses in the ACC. You know, particularly Clemson's is really, really good. But Louisville is not so good, and he was still bad against them.
Yeah, Louisville's got the number 10 defense.
Yeah, you know, Grossell, 57.8% for the year, 1,200 yards, 6 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. But you look at just the ACC games, which is the last 4 games, it's 2 touchdowns and 5 interceptions and 5.5 yards per attempt. I mean, it's awful passing offense, quite possibly the worst in the entire country. And I don't mean this to talk bad.
At this point in time, yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't mean that this is disrespectful to Boston College, but the numbers say that's pretty much what they are.
And he threw 5 interceptions in 4 games, and he got benched in the last game against Syracuse
He did. Yeah. He get benched, and they put in a true freshman. And, you know, he's not a COVID true freshman. He's a guy who enrolled this past January, so he is a regular true freshman with a little bit more time to prepare. Will, you gave me so many sheets of paper.
Emmett Moorhead.
Yeah, we kind of over-prepped for this. We're holding like 8 sheets of paper.
He's 6 of – we went 6 of 15, completed 40% of his passes. Yeah. So. Yeah. I don't know how good of a runner he is. It's just such a small sample size on him. I don't know if they'll turn away from Grossell. They obviously can't win with Grossell, but are they going to be any better with a true freshman? Or do you just keep the red shirt on that dude and build for the future? I mean, you're not going to have a winning record this year if you're Boston College. I know what I would do. But I don't know exactly what to expect. Who they feel like gives them the better chance to win. But either way, it just doesn't sound like they have a good option at all.
Yeah. To give you some idea of Grossell's fall from grace, in air quotes, you know, you talked about the game he had last year, and I one of the better sources for Boston College information is BC Interruption, which is a SB Nation site that's been around for a long time. And I found an article that he wrote couple of weeks ago after they'd lost two games before they'd lost the third and fourth game in a row. And he said, coming into the season, he said expectations were high even after Djurkovic got hurt. They figured they had one of the best backup quarterbacks in college football. So that's how they thought of Grossel before, you know, this recent skid.
Well, and just looking at Boston College entering this season, Jeff Hafley pretty much changed the trajectory of that program in 1 year. They went 6-5 last year, but there was a lot of promise that maybe this year would be the year they finally start to get it back going again.
With what looked like a decent defense coming back and Djurkovic coming back and Zay Flowers, who I think is one of the most underrated players in the ACC. And Garwo is a pretty good running back. Yeah, it looked like they were on pace to have a pretty good year. And I think they would have had a good year if Djurkovic had not gotten hurt. You know, the thing about Hafley is, you know, he likes to throw the ball a lot. And despite the fact that it's just a huge drop-off from Djurkovic to Grossel, he hasn't really changed his strategy any. They've thrown it at least 32 times in these last four ACC games. I mean, the Clemson game, that was a one-score game pretty much all the way through. They needed to run the football because they can't pass it, yet they still threw it 40 times with a guy who can't pass. It's just like he seems so married to the passing game. I mean, I think their best chance to beat Virginia Tech is to line up and run the ball 50 times.
Yeah, they have one of the best run blocking offensive lines in the ACC.
PFF rates their from a grade standpoint, rates their offensive line the number one run blocking offensive line in the ACC, or offense. That includes wide receivers and tight ends and all that too. But yes, they have a good offensive line. Like, use it. You're going to be playing a Virginia Tech team this Friday that has struggled to stop the run but has been really good against the pass. So you're going to go out there and throw it 35 times with one of your quarterbacks who can't pass, or are you actually going to give it to
Garwo.
Who averages 5.9 yards per carry and I think is a pretty good back? We'll see. I mean, if Hafley does that, then he'll finally show a willingness to change his strategy during the middle of the season and – you know, call an offense that actually fits the strengths and weaknesses of his players. And
no, that, but just it's a matchup issue. Virginia Tech's got a good pass defense.
Right.
Run defense can be
shaky,
can be
times.
Spotty. You know, so if they have a brain, if they're evaluating film, they'll come out and run the ball.
And everybody has been really high on Hafley as a coach and what he's done there at Boston College. And generally speaking, I agree with them. But for most coaches, you know, it takes the longer they coach, the more warts appear, right? It's hard to get a feel for everybody's strengths and weaknesses early in their tenure. I think you can get a better feel for their strengths than their weaknesses. Like, it took us several years before we started to identify any of Justin Fuente's weaknesses, right?
Yeah.
Well, I've identified the first Hafley weakness, and it seems to be kind of an unwillingness to change philosophies even when your quarterback can't execute your philosophies.
It seems like almost the exact same conversation we had last week with Georgia Tech, completely flipping the philosophy when the head coaching change was made from being a run-first team to now a pass-first team. The last time the Hokies saw Boston College was a blowout in Lane Stadium last year during 2020. But the previous 2 years before that, Tech got beat both times, and it was pretty much on the back of the Boston College running game.
Yeah, and BC was running the football in Tech early in that game last year. They just kept fumbling it.
Yeah. They had five turnovers.
Right, yeah. They were really breaking off big runs and chunks right up the middle in Tech on that first drive last year. Bam, they fumbled it, and Tech got it and scored, and it really just snowballed on BC. But they were able to effectively run the ball in Tech last year, and they should try it again this year. I mean, and I don't mean like a 50-50 split. I'm talking like run the ball 75% of the time and try to keep this game low scoring in the teens, because, you know, I don't think – this is odd to say because of the struggles Virginia Tech's offense has had this year, but I don't think Boston College can keep pace with Virginia Tech in a game in the 20s.
Yeah.
You know, so they need to keep this one low scoring.
You did mention Zay Flowers. He seems to be the most the X factor player on that Boston College offense. He had almost 1,000 yards last year, just shy of 900, 9 touchdowns. A little bit of a slower start to this season, but still, he's a dangerous guy. Probably going to have Waller shadowing him most of the day.
Yeah, he's a very dangerous player, and unfortunately for Boston College, because of their quarterback situation, they can't effectively use their best player on offense.
Yeah, so let's drill down in that a little bit. I'm sitting here looking at the roster card, so I know these are numbers and you're listening, but pay attention. He's got 35 receptions, 511 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Trey Turner has 34 receptions, 602 yards, and two touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So statistically, Flowers is on a level right with Trey Turner this year, where typically with Dracovic slinging the ball to him, he'd probably be up around 50 catches maybe,
maybe
60.
Yeah, he caught 55 last year, and that was in a shortened season.
That's right.
And against, pretty much a full ACC schedule, with no bad non-conference games where you can do a little bit of stat padding and things like that. So I wouldn't be shocked if, with Dracovic throwing him the ball, if this would have been a 75 catch season or so for Flowers. I think he's a very good player.
So this will have to be a game you mentioned, if Boston College is going to win this game, they have to effectively be able to run the ball. Patrick Garwo, we've mentioned him, 689 yards, 5 touchdowns this season. So a good season for Garwo, who's the lead guy in that backfield. And the Hokies defense has struggled with that, with stopping the run the last few weeks. We talked about it on Monday's podcast that against Syracuse, it was the linebackers who couldn't seem to stop the run. And then against Georgia Tech, it was the safeties. How do the Hokies kind of put it all together if they want to stop the run game?
I hope they can. Ideally, you would get some penetration. But, Boston College has a really good offensive line. And so you just got to play disciplined football. And I think you can afford to put an extra man in the box. I'd be disappointed if Tech didn't. Because if Grossell can beat them, you tip your cap and then you change your strategy in the middle of the game, right? But you don't go out there fearing the BC passing game. Instead, you need to go out there and make sure you stop their running game, to me, and put him in long yardage situations, because if you put him in a bunch of long yardage situations, they're not going to be able to move the football. I just don't see how they could.
Yeah.
Boston College throws the ball a lot more than Syracuse, but that was kind of the same conversation we had before Syracuse, and then Syracuse threw the ball all over the yard.
Yeah, too. They did, and they weren't very efficient. They completed fewer than 50% of their passes, but when they needed to complete a pass, they completed it.
And that's been one of the themes this year. We go back to Tyler Buckner throwing a couple of good balls before he melted down in the third quarter for Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And for Schrader, that last pass was really nice. Now, he probably had some others during the game that were good too. So if you're kind of one of those people that rolls your eyes and go, here we go again, you are going to see a little something from Grossell that you're not used to seeing, but I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not. I watched their game against Clemson. I watched that whole game. And if Grossell was halfway decent, they would have won it. Maybe by 10 points or 14 points or something. He had Zay Flowers open down the field behind the Clemson secondary several times, and he just couldn't complete it.
Yeah.
And I think you roll that dice if you're Virginia Tech, in my opinion. And if he does happen to connect with one of them, then maybe you tip your cap and adjust, or make him do it twice.
Right.
So I would go out there with the full strategy of just attacking their offense, attack, 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 and which Tech hasn't really been an attack style defense this year. I think they were. I've only watched the condensed version
of the
Georgia Tech game. I thought they seemed a little more attacking this past week than they had been in the past, and maybe it was the nature of the opponent that they were playing. But for me, this is a defense, or excuse me, this is an offense that I think you want to go and get after and get them in long yardage situations, because if you do that, I think your chances of a turnover jumps up. You win the field position game and just makes it easier on your own offense to score points, because BC, we'll get to their defense later, they are one of the best passing defenses in the country, and I don't think they're going to give up a lot of points to Virginia Tech, so it would be nice to get that field position advantage and get some short fields.
And when you have a quarterback who struggles to throw the football downfield, a lot of times you love to have a safety valve, you're running back catching passes. That hasn't been the case for Garwo. Is it Levy or Travis Levy?
Travis.
Out of the
I
out
was
the
calling
backfield.
Levy. Yeah.
Levy, we'll go with Levy. Travis Levy out of the backfield has really been the only one who's caught a few passes. But
they use three different backs besides Garwo. They've got Alex Sinkfield, who's a senior, 59 carries, 4.1 yards per carry. I don't think he's caught a pass this year. I think Garwo's caught one pass and Sinkfield has caught none. But Levy will get the ball too. He's got 50 carries, but he has 14 catches. So. And doing some research on him in high school, he was a guy who played both running back and wide receiver. Okay. So he has receiving skills. But, when Garwo, number 24, or Sinkfield, number 26, when they're in the game, don't look for checkdowns to the running backs, because they haven't done that this year at all.
Interesting stuff. So Levy has averaged, again, Chris said 14 catches. He's averaged 9.8 per reception. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't been super productive, along of 27 and no touchdowns.
Right. So, and the fact that Garwo and Sinkfield just have combined for one catch this year, if you've got BC in a long yard, third and long yardage situation, as long as Levy's not in the game, I think you attack, because BC's shown no inclination to throw screens to their running backs or anything like that, unless Levy's in the game, maybe. So maybe you play it a little bit safer if Levy's in the game, but if Garwo or Sinkfield are in the game and it's third and 14, that running back screen is not coming, because
they're going to stay in and block.
Right. So I think you really get aggressive in situations like that.
Looking at their offense, if it's third and 14 and Levy's not on the field, I think you triple cover Zay Flowers and say he's not going to beat us. They've got nobody else at this point. Levy also, I wanted to mention our obligatory special teams report. Levy, a very good kick returner as well, so that could be a factor in a game.
Returned one for a touchdown earlier this year, 96 yards. Granted, it was against UMass. But this is a very even special teams matchup. Like, the FEI special teams rankings has Tech 24th in the country and BC
27th. So, speaking of Travis Levy, those that read my stuff and remember things that I write, this goes back to the 2019 season opener.
Knew you were going to bring this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I probably brought it up on previous podcasts. Levy is, I'd have to look him up and see what size he is. So, give me a second here. He is, I can't remember what number he is right off the top of my head.
He is 23.
It's number 23, so he's 5'11", 203.
Plays bigger than that.
Not small, not a huge guy, but this goes back to his freshman year. He sent three Virginia Tech football players to the sidelines in that 2019 game. Divine Diablo, who's not a small guy. He blindsided Tywan Garbutt, and I think, was it Garbutt? I think that kept Garbutt out for a week or two.
Yeah, I think he missed two
concussion
weeks.
Type stuff. Yeah. And I don't remember the third person he sent off the sidelines, but he was a human wrecking ball. It's 2 years later, and he is still, he's not a frontline guy for BC, but he is turning out to be productive. But I just remember watching that game and thinking, that guy's physical. That's a guy I'd like to have on my football team.
Right, and this matchup completely favors Virginia Tech, at least as far as the numbers go. Yeah. But, you know, if BC comes out, if a guy like Levy comes out and just out-physicals Virginia Tech from the opening whistle, then, we could find ourselves in a battle. So it's important to remember the lessons of that game when BC just came. It wasn't just Ryan Willis turnovers in that game. Granted, that ended up being the difference. But early in the game, it was like BC made the first hit. You know, they punched Virginia Tech in the chin.
And wasn't that when Andre Williams was playing for him? Was that his name? That big running back?
You're taking A.J. Dillon.
He told you it was Andre.
I actually watched a full Packers game on Thursday night for the first time since pre-COVID.
Is Dillon in the NFL?
Dillon plays for the Packers.
He had 90 yards or something.
He was very impressive on Thursday. Yeah.
And so this is what happens when you have too many names and numbers in your head after all these years. I remember the A and I remember the double L. And it's like, who's A.J. Dillon? Am I making that up?
No, you're not making that up.
Andre Williams is, I believe he was a running back for BC, but A.J. Dillon was the one who played in 2019.
I'm reverting to him. Let's move on, please.
I think A.J. Dillon, this is just off the top of the head, I think he had 200 yards or something in the 2018 game when BC came in and had a big day. Yeah. I did want to flash back to that 2019 season opener. I remember watching that game and feeling frustrated at the end that I felt like Tech should have won that game. I went back and looked at the box score. Ryan Willis was the starting quarterback.
Yes.
He threw three interceptions, and Virginia Tech ran for a total of 98 yards.
Yeah.
And Tech only lost by seven.
I know. When you look at the box score, it was like Virginia Tech didn't deserve to win the football game. But at the same time, you take away a couple of those turnovers, and they probably still somehow would have won the game. But that was the everybody liked Willis before then because they loved his aggressiveness. Scared money don't make money, right?
That was the next game he started after the UVA 2018 game,
right?
Correct?
Right.
So,
correct.
That's not true, actually.
No, the Marshall. Marshall and the bowl game,
yes,
actually. But yeah, it's the next
it's next fun, really but, meaningful
yes,
one.
Exactly, yeah.
Quick trivia here. I don't think I'm stealing this from Katie. Who was the starting quarterback in that game for Boston College?
Which one?
2019 season opener.
Mm.
Is he at? Oh gosh,
Jesse's transferred somewhere.
He's transferred somewhere.
I can't think of the name, and he plays for a really good team right now.
He does. They currently would be in the playoff right now after last night's ranking.
Which team is it that he plays?
Oregon.
For? Oh, almost had it. Anthony Brown.
Anthony Brown.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right.
Oh, give me enough time.
Okay, so he was the same class as Josh Jackson coming out of high school, right? Yeah. Virginia Tech offered Josh Jackson and Brown. And Jackson was the guy who committed first. So Virginia Tech took Jackson, and then Brown went to Boston College.
Wasn't Brown the one who had the big long run at the end of the 2018 game to seal it in Lane Stadium?
I believe probably so. Yeah. Speaking of Oregon, the college football playoff rankings, first ones came out. Some interesting stuff in there.
It was very interesting stuff. It's like, okay, Alabama lost a game, and they actually don't have as quality a win as the teams behind them, but they're still number
two. They're number two.
They're number two based on reputation. But here's the thing. It doesn't matter right now. If they lose to Georgia, which I think they should lose to Georgia, then they're out.
Two lost teams usually do not get into
the
college football playoff.
It would be tougher than
the
so I don't think that matters right now.
Michigan State number three, and then Oregon four, followed by Ohio State at five, and Cincinnati undefeated at six.
With a quality win over Notre Dame, who I think is ninth.
And that was a road win, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then Oklahoma undefeated. They are eighth. So
there's a lot of, you can make an argument now for expanding the playoffs, I guess.
Well, Oklahoma undefeated with near losses to Tulane, Kansas, Texas. Yeah. So, but I think the one thing everybody can agree on is that Georgia deserves to be number one.
We can talk about expanding the playoffs and everything all we want. Like, I don't think Georgia's capable of being.
Doesn't matter how
what
many
have they
teams
allowed?
Are in
four
it.
Touchdowns all year? I've never seen it. Have you ever seen anything like their defense?
That defense is.
It's like the 86 Bears.
Yeah, I will actually make time to watch Georgia because that defense is so, I don't want to say unprecedented. It's a once every 5 to 10 years defense.
They had a game watching party for Georgia Florida on Saturday in the Battery, in one of the main bars right next to the stadium. And you know, there's Georgia fans there, and then there's Florida fans there, and I mean, we're sitting there watching the game at all over the place. Wherever we go in to grab a beer or something, the game is on, and it's just a steady pounding of Georgia, and the Florida fans are just like, there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing anybody can do
about
it.
That game was 3-0, I want to say, with like 4 minutes left in the first half.
It was.
And then Georgia got three turnovers and scored three touchdowns in the final four minutes of the first half.
So I remember reading an article shortly after Kirby Smart was hired about what he was doing in recruiting. And of course, he brought the Alabama model, but he was working harder and bringing even more to the table than Alabama was. So this is the fruit of being a really, really good recruiting football team for going on 3 or 4 years now.
I actually wrote this down. I wanted to look at the red zone defense for Boston College and Virginia Tech, but while I was looking, I caught a glimpse of Georgia's stats in the red zone this year. Unbelievable. So through 8 games, they've only allowed teams to reach the red zone 14 times, less than 2 times a game. And in those 14 trips, only 4 touchdowns have been scored.
Right, and one of those was like Kentucky late against Georgia's backups.
Yes, right. So 4 touchdowns and 14 red zone trips, only 8 total scores. So they're stopping the other team from scoring in the red zone almost half the time, any points, not even field goals. So
yeah, I hope fans of other teams haven't made any like definite plans to win the national championship this year, because that's just not going to happen.
Now, Georgia still hasn't won a national championship since the Herschel Walker days, right?
Yeah, that's right.
No,
they lost to Alabama.
The Tua overtime pass that beat them.
So if they win this year, it'll be slightly different.
It'll be like when Clemson won it for the first time since Danny Ford was there.
After having lost to Alabama the previous year,
I think something like that.
And we've been talking about Kenneth Walker in Michigan State, too. I want to bring it up. 5 touchdowns against Michigan on Saturday.
Yeah, I took a little nap around noon on Saturday, but that game was on TV, so I could kind of hear it while I was half asleep.
And he scored 4 touchdowns while you were sleeping?
I don't know if it was while I was sleeping, but he scored 5 for the game. 2-star recruit, evaluated and recruited and developed by Dave Clawson.
And Wake Forest also ranked in the top 10 in the first college football
number 10,
rankings.
Right?
Number 9.
Maybe 9.
Yeah. They're number 9 in one of the polls.
They're either 9 in playoff, 10 in AP, or
flip flop,
whatever it is.
And they get UNC this weekend. And
non-conference game.
I swear, like after this season, Jim Phillips should be like, okay, this is not allowed anymore. You know how many people that's going to confuse this weekend?
Yes. Especially if North Carolina wins.
They're going to show the score on ESPN, and it's going to be final. And then it's going to show, like, let's say North Carolina wins. And this is going to show Wake Forest still unbeaten in the ACC, and people are going to be like, "What is going on?"
Yeah.
this shouldn't be happening. It shouldn't be allowed to happen. I remember when they signed the game; it was like 5 years ago, and I'm like, "Oh, this doesn't make sense." And now that said, you know, this is North Carolina can't stop anybody, and seemingly nobody can stop Wake Forest. So,
yeah.
I mean, Wake could put hang 60 on them this weekend, which would make me happy.
It's interesting. You know, Wake's got a really productive offense right now, but, you know, they didn't go over 500 yards till about three or four games ago. And now it seems that's all they're doing is putting up a lot of yards and points.
They are number four in the country in offensive efficiency.
Yeah.
So they're a very, very efficient offense. They're more efficient defensively than you would think. Like, they're 51st. Even though they're, like, total defense, they're 97th. It's just the style of play that they have, yeah.
Well, Wake, the ACC's last chance at a playoff spot. They would need some things to go right in front of them and win out, but...
Ooh, that would be ugly, though. They'd be number four, and they'd wind up playing Georgia.
Could we get a Georgia-Michigan State Wake Forest-Cincinnati playoff? That would be
awesome.
Sort of.
Georgia would win both games by 40,
but... bloodbath.
That would be sort of awesome.
All right. Well, I did want to dive into the Boston College offensive line, but I know what Katie's talking about, so we're going to touch on that here as well. So let's send it over to Katie.
Yeah, this is a significant game for Boston College, of course. It's their annual Red Bandana game, annual since 2014.
Oh, is it really? Wow.
It is. They wore these uniforms earlier in the year against UMass, so they have a win in them, but it wasn't classified as the Red Bandana game in that game. I think they just wore them because it was on 9/11. So Virginia Tech playing in big-ish stages in back-to-back weeks. Last week it was Georgia Tech's homecoming. This week it's BC's annual Red Bandana game. But they're only 3-4 all time during this game. You would think that they would have somewhat of an advantage, but they don't. So we'll see how they fare this week. NFL standouts Luke Kuechly and Matt Hasselbeck will be in attendance as well. And then Boston College has several players with famous bloodlines on this 2021 roster, which is really interesting. Javian Dane, who's son of Heisman Trophy winner Ron Dane, took it from Michael Vick in 99.
Wait a minute. I think when Ron Dane won the Heisman, I think his girlfriend was holding the baby during that. And I don't know.
That must be him.
Yeah. That's cool.
Jacob Kraft, son of Patriots president Jonathan Kraft, is on this team. Tyler Vrabel. Am I saying that right?
Vrabel.
Okay. Yep. Son of Titans head coach is on this team. There's... Mm-hmm. Joe Tessitore, ESPN announcer.
I
wondered
if he was related.
Wow.
Well, does the son also talk too much during football games?
Well, so John Tessitore, Joe was calling one of John's games last year, and John scored on a fake field goal or something
like
that.
That rings a bell.
And he never made it known that it was his son. Like, it was so weird. I was like, there has to be a relation there, but...
See, I think it was the 1997 National Championship game, the last time Michigan won. Bob Greasy was calling the game, and his son, whose name suddenly escapes me, was the starting quarterback for Michigan. And I remember, Brian. Yeah. So at the end of the game, it's Keith Jackson and Bob Greasy calling the game, and Bob Greasy had to have a moment.
Yeah.
Jackson was like, "Do you need to take a break?" And Greasy's like, "Yeah."
Well, and just so it happened, Brian Greasy now on Monday Night Football, Joe Tessitore the previous voice of Monday Night Football. So both of those together. And then I was talking to Katie before, Alec Lindstrom, the center for Boston College, his brother was a first-round pick of the Falcons.
And their dad,
18.
Yep, and their dad played in the NFL for a while back in the day. Boston College is a really good school, and they've always been really good at player development. Like, they get the most out of their talent level, I think, for the most part. And so, like, if you're a former NFL player that understands that type of stuff, or if you're a Kraft who wants your kids to get a good education. So it makes sense to me that there's a lot of famous names on the
Well, like Mike Vrabel played in New England for so many years, it makes sense. Back to Boston.
And then for trivia, Virginia Tech historically plays at least one Thursday night game per year. We've kind of strayed away from that in recent years. So just want to talk about our success or failure during weeknight games in general. Since 2008, we've played 37 games on a weeknight, Monday through Friday. So what's your best guess for our record in that?
Since 2008?
Yes. 37 games total.
37 games.
I'll bet it's close to 50-50.
That was 21-16.
20-17.
Oh. That was the first one that came to my mind. I don't know why, but
So very close. Friday night games in particular were 6-2. Thursday night games were 12-8. So a good record on Friday night, I would say. But most of those wins come against UVA, of course.
Right.
And then I heard you guys say this on Monday, Scott Glessner's segment of this podcast.
Yes.
So he put some interesting stuff in the chat today. Apparently, BC is the team that we've played the most since 1993. We've played them 29 times, and then UVA is one game behind that with 28. And then this Friday will be the first time since November 1st, 1974, where Virginia Tech will play a regular season game outside of the state of Virginia on a Friday.
Interesting. Wow. So BC's first on the list because those 2 years we played them twice in the same year.
And now they skipped a year. They didn't play in 2004,
right.
but doing it twice in and 2 years.
Yeah, Tech played BC twice in 2007 and 2008, once in the regular season and once in the ACC championship game.
Okay.
And Tech won the important ones.
So that's why we've played Boston College more than UVA.
Since 1993? Then. Is that what you said? Yeah. Since Big East round robin play started. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was also doing some research this week on short weeks under Justin Fuente. What do you think Virginia Tech's record is? Eight games.
Short weeks?
I don't think it's very good.
I don't know. 5-3.
5-3, correct.
Okay. No, I'm thinking about bye weeks.
Well, so two of those wins are Friday games against UVA. So that happens almost every year. Two of them are after Florida State on Labor Day and West Virginia the day before Labor Day, beating Delaware and William & Mary, and then beat Miami on a Thursday night.
So if you're sweating the fact that the Virginia Tech had a road game last weekend and they're having a road game on a short week this week, the team was back in town Saturday night, you know, so it was almost like a home game.
It's not a long flight. My flight from Richmond, we went a little bit west towards the mountains and then came down. But we took a straight shot from Atlanta to Richmond on the way back, and it was only a 1-hour and 6-minute flight.
Yeah.
So, you're from Roanoke to Atlanta, if you did a straight shot, you're looking at an hour flight, basically, thereabouts. That's not – you don't spend a lot of time traveling.
So, Malcolm, did you and David see Braxton Burmeister out Saturday night? Is that how I know that? I think somebody was talking about this. Yeah, I saw Burmeister out in Blacksburg on Saturday night.
Yeah, so, I saw a picture of him. There was, like, people coming up to him in bars asking for pictures. I think he was at Champs or something like that.
Yeah, so in my brain, I was like, okay, so they got back early, so that's not a big issue.
I think David did say he saw Braxton at Champs on Saturday night. So, yeah, they must have got back decently early. I mean, noon kick.
Noon 30.
So. They got back at, like, 7 p.m., I want to say. So
man, that's quick. So you start playing the game at 12:30. Game goes to sometime between 3:30 and 4, and you're out at Champs at like 7 o'clock at night. that is quick.
Quick turnaround.
The interview is quick, shower quick, get on the plane, go.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here on episode 205 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We will come back, talk a lot about Boston College defense, how they match up with the Hokies offense that has started to roll over the last couple weeks. We'll also get keys to the game and game picks for this weekend's matchup with the Eagles. We're going to take a break. Stay with us here on episode 205 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We'll be right back. We welcome you back on episode 205 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Glad you're with us as we preview Virginia Tech and Boston College on Friday evening up in Chestnut Hill. Hokies trying to get back-to-back wins and get back above 500 on the season. If you are watching live in the YouTube, be sure to keep dropping comments and questions in the chat. If you have a question for Will and Chris, we'll get to those at the very end of the show. We've already gone through Boston College's offense, their struggles without Phil Jurkovic. But now let's look at the defense. A solid group. Jeff Hafley, a good defensive coach on that side of the ball. But they had a rough day against Sean Tucker. Their last time out against Syracuse gave up more than 200 yards to the Syracuse running back. And really, their run defense has not been very good, especially coming up against a Virginia Tech team that's been running the ball much better.
Yeah, you know, look at their last four games, rush defense. Clemson, 40 carries, 231 yards. NC State, 34 carries, 130 yards. They did okay against NC State. Louisville, 47 carries, 331 yards. And Syracuse, 47 carries, 293 yards. They're really, really struggling to stop the run right now and trending down. Meanwhile, Virginia Tech's run game is trending up. If you've seen what the Hokies have done, averaging, 250 yards or so over the
right
last
around
two games
there.
On the ground.
Yeah, and close to 6 yards a carry, I think, the last couple games.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, BC's pass defense is legit, man. They held Syracuse to 65 passing yards and Louisville to 107 passing yards. So they've been very good on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and in team pass efficiency defense, they're rated 27th in the country.
So yeah, they've done a nice job there. I would expect Virginia Tech to run the ball a lot. I think if BC is smart, they'll try to run the ball a lot. It's like, I don't think this is going to be one of those 3.5 hour football games. I think this is going to be a pretty short game by modern standards. And I think Virginia Tech has more firepower than them, which is why I think Virginia Tech will win. But the BC pass defense is appears to me to be legit.
We mentioned last week how it could be another big game from Malachi Thomas. He broke 100 yards again. This seems like another game where he could maybe become a true freshman to run for back-to-back-to-back 100-yard games.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
Yeah, I don't know if KJ did that. We talked about him in the last podcast, how he did it twice in a row.
Yep.
As a true freshman.
Which games were them? Were they?
Miami, UVA, 2001. Miami and UVA, and I don't remember right off the top of my head what games were around those.
I want to say he got his first start against Temple and rushed for 1,000 yards, but I don't know if that was right before the UVA game.
You mean rush for 100?
Yeah.
Though you could rush for 1,000 against Temple back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. I do know that, you know, he did not do it against Florida State in the bowl game. Even if he did, they didn't really count bowl game stats back then anyway, right. I don't think. If he did it against Miami and he did it against UVA, I think they played Temple.
You know, it may
before.
Have been three in a row because they got smoked by Pittsburgh 38-7, then they beat Temple 35-0.
That was his first start.
I've got it up. He did UVA. I think 300-yard games in a row.
Okay. I want to say he ran for like a $150 against Temple. It was a huge game.
Yeah. He had three huge games in a row. 155 against Temple.
I don't know how I remember
7.4 yards per carry. He had 37 carries against Virginia, for 181 yards, and then against Miami, 24 carries, 160 yards.
Yeah.
Nice. So Malachi Thomas is shooting for that.
Yes.
That.
He almost ran for, I want to say, 500 yards in
just three games.
496, if I'm doing my math correctly.
As a true freshman.
And KJ was just a freak athlete. Now, Malachi Thomas isn't a freak athlete. I think he might be, like, at the same stage, a better natural running back than KJ. I think he understands body lean. I think his vision's really good, but he's not as big and strong as KJ was, as he was a freshman, of course. KJ was a dominant athlete early in his career, and that's why he was a 5-star recruit. Malachi Thomas is a 3-star recruit because he's not a dominant athlete. He's just a good natural football player, which sometimes the recruiting services don't value, or it can be difficult for those guys to spot. I do think when you get him a year or two in the strength and conditioning program, you remember when he almost broke that run at the end of the Georgia Tech game? Give him a year, an offseason of doing squats, and he breaks that tackle, and instead of 103 yards or whatever, it's 150 yards.
Yes.
Yeah, and another touchdown for Virginia Tech.
So one of the things David brought up on Monday's podcast is that Thomas doesn't lose yardage.
Yep. And actually, neither did Raheem Blackshear in this game.
Yes, in that game, neither one of them did. Thomas has -3 rushing yards in 57 carries. So he's got 305 positive yards and -3 rushing yards. It adds up to 302. And that is an underappreciated trait in a running back, to always be falling forward, always be pushing forward.
It's also impressive for a guy his size. I know he's listed at 197, but, man, he doesn't look 197. Yeah.
Maybe, again, after a year in the weight room, he'll get up to that size. But definitely not that big right now. Could be another big week for him and Raheem Blackshear in the backfield. You mentioned the pass defense for Boston College. They have been impressive. Some good players. Josh DeBerry stands out at nickel. ACC all ACC honorable mention last year. Been basically their best defensive player all season.
Yeah, I think so. And generally speaking, like, it just doesn't seem like they've really struggled, I think, on the back end with their run defense. Like, a couple of their corners are bad at it. A couple of their linebackers are bad at it and safeties. But generally speaking, their defensive line has been good for the most part. I've always thought, like, Marcus Valdez was a good player. I think they're physical. Linebacker play for BC this year, you generally expect BC's linebackers to play a little better than they have this year, in my opinion.
I mean, we mentioned Luke Kuechly is going to be
He's going to be there. Yeah, so. And there's no Luke Kuechly on this team, for sure.
No Luke Kuechly on this team. I mentioned earlier that I wanted to talk about the red zone defense because I was thinking, you know, they've Sean Tucker ran for 200 yards against Boston College, but Syracuse only scored 21 points. If they're getting down there, how have they done? And BC, indeed, a top 30 red zone defense in the country.
Yeah, and that's not too surprising, I guess. I think you have to be balanced to score. You know, he might have rushed for 200 yards against him, but, I mean, Garrett Schrader only threw for 65. Yeah. You know, so...
I hadn't seen that stat when I looked up the red zone.
Where was the Big Ten throw against Boston College? Right. Exactly.
So, talking about red zone defense, it's... So, like, which stat are you looking at when you say that?
So, it's amount of scores in overall, as many tries divided by. So, they're tied for 29th. They've given up just 12 touchdowns and 22 tries.
So, if you look at the NCAA stats, they do not have columns for touchdown percentage.
They don't.
CFBstats.com does. And that's one of the things I like about CFB stats is you can actually go to the red zone stats and sort them by touchdown percentage.
Yeah, I was looking through the NCAA ones. I saw 22 tries. I believe they're doing it. They've allowed 18 scores or 16 scores in 22 tries, so that makes them tied for 29th. For comparison, Virginia Tech tied for 82nd in the country, 14 touchdowns, 18 total scores, and 21 attempts. Right. So Boston College defense going to be tough for the Hokies to go after. I was reading through your preview, which is now up on techsideline.com. PFF run grades have not been very good for Boston College so far this year.
Have not been good, and that's particularly the case with their linebackers and one of their corners. I want to say, Elijah Jones is not a good run defender. Cam Arnold has struggled at strong side linebacker. Isaiah Henderson at nose tackle hasn't been good. He's a little bit undersized. But for the most part, their defensive linemen have been pretty good, but it's the guys behind them letting them down. So very similar to like Georgia Tech last week, where generally speaking, their defensive linemen have been okay, but their linebackers and their safeties haven't been. And Virginia Tech was able to put together another good rushing performance against them last week. So hopefully more of the same this week against Boston College. I really want Virginia Tech to be aggressive in this game, and I'm not talking about coming out there and throwing bombs down the field. I'm talking about like going after the BC offense, trying to create short fields for the Virginia Tech offense, maybe even get a defensive score if you can manage it. So I really want Tech's defense to attack. If they can get up by like two scores at the end of the first quarter just from being aggressive defensively and flipping field position, then that's the ball game right there.
Yeah. Takes the pressure off Braxton Burmeister too.
Exactly. And Boston College is not going to be able to come back from a double-digit deficit with their passing offense. It's just extremely unlikely. So I would really like Virginia Tech to come out and take the bull by the horns in the first quarter in this one.
So it's interesting looking at their defensive stats, going just by the traditional metrics. Their total defense is... They're 42nd in the country at 347 yards a game, but it's pretty much half of it is given up in run defense and half of it is given up in pass defense. So their rush defense is 91st in the country. Their passing yards allowed is 10th in the country.
Wow.
Yeah, and those are traditional metrics. They're not efficiency, but it's still interesting to take a look.
Yeah, you can look up their yards per carry, how much they allow in the run game. And I put it in the article. I forgot what it was, but it wasn't very good.
So they
are not good when it comes to defending the run, and hopefully that's something Tech can take advantage of.
Well, you've mentioned that it might be another big game from Malachi Thomas, but Trey Turner has started to trend in that right direction, as have a lot of the wide receivers since the beginning of the season. Maybe tough for them to get it going this game.
I thought Trey Turner played his toughest game in a Virginia Tech uniform this past Saturday, but the tackles he broke, and he even went to the sidelines and threw up at one point. Now, there's also a nasty rumor going around, and I don't know if this is true or not, and Fuente would never admit this, that Turner's hurt and he's not going to be able to play on Saturday. And I have no idea if that's true or not. I mean, the rumor was actually like a broken sternum or something like that. But I have no idea. I have no idea if that's true.
And I would throw up too if I had a broken sternum.
I probably would too. Yeah. So hopefully that's not, because that would be a big loss for the Virginia Tech offense, but even more of a reason for them to run the football against Boston College, which is what they need to do. And, you know, this is a game where, like, we've been giving Malachi Thomas so much credit recently, and rightfully so, because he's been very, very good. But Blackshear has been really good the last couple weeks. He's averaged more yards per carry than Malachi Thomas in both of those games. He just didn't have as many carries. So definitely – and he had probably his best single play of the season last season against BC when he broke that tackle and ran 30 or 40 yards for a touchdown.
Yeah, so he was very physical going up the middle for a guy that's not very big. Right. And I thought that was a weakness of his last year. I think when they ran him up the middle, Blackshear, he was pretty ineffective, but I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, and I think with a guy like Blackshear, you know, he had to come in and he missed so much of the preseason with COVID.
Yeah.
And I just don't think he was in shape to start the season last year. And it was just a tough year for him because of that. But I think this season, and particularly the last 2 weeks, you're seeing the real Raheem Blackshear that Rutgers fans saw when he was a good player for them.
And could it be more that his role is kind of the number two? He was kind of leaned on early in the season to be the guy at running back, and now that Malachi Thomas has taken a little bit of the load off him, it seems like he's flourishing.
And I would argue that Blackshear is Tech's most, whether he's the starting running back or number two, I would say he's Virginia Tech's most complete offensive football player. He's doing a really good job pass blocking this year. He's a big time threat in the passing game, and he's done a nice job in the running game the last couple of weeks. So I think he's Virginia Tech's most complete offensive player.
And that's about all you evaluate a running back on. I mean, running backs rarely run block, so that's not really a thing.
Yeah.
So it's how do you pass block? How do you run and
carry out your fakes would be another one, but that's not something that most people are going to be able to see. But generally speaking, like, I'm very pleased with his play this year.
And you weren't here on Monday. I want to ask you, how has Malachi Thomas progressed pass blocking wise?
You know, his first couple of games not so good, and that's probably why he wasn't playing earlier in the season. And I know that doesn't make sense to most people, but that's just how football coaches think. It's why Ryan Williams redshirted under Billy Height. It's why David Wilson didn't play very much as a true freshman, because they couldn't pass block and they were trying not to get Tyrod Taylor killed.
Right.
Right? Which is probably a pretty good decision in hindsight. Same thing this year, man. They're trying not to get Burmeister killed. I don't think we would be capable of winning a football game if Braxton Burmeister got hurt, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So it's extremely important to make sure your running back doesn't get him killed. Now, that being said, I think they were fine. Like, Jalen Holston, for whatever reason, was having a horrible year pass blocking. And that shouldn't happen to a senior, but he was. So if you might as well throw the guy in who's better at running the football.
So all Thomas had to do was...
If neither one of them can pass block, you might as well throw the guy in who can run.
Yeah.
Now, Thomas took a big step forward in pass protection against Georgia Tech, so that's really good to see. Actually had the third highest pass blocking grade on the team.
Do you remember how many snaps he was involved
Not in? Very many. I don't want to say like 8 or 9.
Right.
So they're not asking him to do it a lot, it doesn't seem like. They asked him to do it, I think, once against Pitt and maybe like 6 times against Syracuse.
I mentioned on Monday that grade kind of surprises me, because obviously if he's blocking well, you don't notice him as much, but the one time I did notice him in pass protection, he turned to block a guy and the guy was already behind him.
Oh, wow.
So I believe early third quarter when Burmeister got sacked. Let's go into keys to the game here. I think I know what Chris is going to say, but what did the Hokies have to do to make this a 2-game win streak, get back above 500?
Man, you got to run the football. You have to run the football because you're not going to be able to pass it against these guys, most likely. You know, looking at the effectiveness of Virginia Tech's passing offense this year, coupled with the fact that, well, let's say the Trey Turner rumor is true and he's out, how are you going to pass the ball against the number 10 pass defense in the country or whatever? I mean, they're legitimately good. So if you can't run the ball, that means you're not going to move the ball. So Tech has to go out there and be able to establish the run. So to me, that's the key of the game. I don't think Boston College is going to be able to score enough to beat Virginia Tech. It's just a matter of But at the same time, if Tech doesn't run the ball, how are they going to score? So to me, that's it. Run the ball.
I would say in addition to that, don't screw it up.
Yeah.
I think Virginia Tech's the better football team and should win this game. And I think before we went live, I said, I think this is the easiest game to pick all year other than the Duke game. I just really feel like Tech's going to win this one. Last week, I picked them to beat Georgia Tech because I quote-unquote had a feeling. No, this week, I think they should win this game. I think in ACC play they are 4-4 in Chestnut Hill, so it's not like it's a house of horrors for them.
Tech 4-2 over the last 6 trips to Chestnut.
Yeah, it's not Heinz Field,
right?
You know,
or the Carrier Dome.
Sure.
So we were talking about attendance earlier, and unlike Virginia Tech, Boston College's schedule is skewed to home games later in the year. They've only had 3 home games so far this year. And one of those was against Missouri, where they had good attendance, and then they had 40,000 against
NC State.
It's hard to say where the Boston College fans' mindset is going to be at this point. They may be a little dejected losing four in a row, yeah, and they may not show up, or they may respond to the fact that an old rival's coming to town. It's Friday night.
Let's they got go some former NFL players
red
there.
Red Bandana game.
Yeah, Red Bandana game's a good point, you know. So
it is going to be right around 30 degrees on Friday night in Chestnut Hill.
That doesn't bother them. So at least 35 to 40,000, maybe more. So the environment ought to be pretty good, and we'll see how Virginia Tech responds.
I'd actually be more comfortable with a good environment than I would be if there was like 15,000 people there sitting on their hands.
Yes.
I forget who tweeted it on Saturday. I heard Atlanta was the opposite of electric. I want to say Mike Nizelec used that term.
Yeah,
on Twitter.
Just looking, watching the condensed version, it didn't seem very impressive to me. Will's right. This is like, don't screw it up. That's kind of the right terminology. Just doesn't look like Boston College is gonna has the firepower to beat Virginia Tech. Now, and this might actually be one of the most boring games of the year, maybe the most boring. And if it goes the way it's supposed to go, it should be one of the most boring games of the year.
And don't be, you know, Virginia Tech had a good offensive game last week against Georgia Tech, and everybody says, well, Georgia Tech's terrible. Well, Virginia Tech also had a pretty good offensive game against Syracuse, mm-hmm, who's one of the better defensive teams in the conference.
Yes.
So the fact that Boston College is a very good pass defense team doesn't mean you can't have, you know, 400 to 500 yards against them if Virginia Tech looks as good on offense as they've looked the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know that Tech is going to rack up a bunch of total yards this week simply because I think there's an overall strategy you can play against Boston College that is geared towards field position and things like that, and putting their offense in bad positions. If you can put your own offense in short fields, you're not going to get a lot of total yards.
Correct.
But you're going to have a better chance to win the football game.
And if both teams are running the ball, it could be less possessions, less opportunities to go get yards.
And a bigger key becomes who finishes well in the red zone, which the Hokies didn't do very well against Georgia Tech.
Right.
No. Well, let's get into game picks here. Once again, you guys are all in lockstep. Chris,
I don't remember the score I picked.
Hang on, 24-13.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I was going back and forth between like 24-13, 27-14, you know, something like that. I don't think it's going to be a very exciting game. I could see it being even less than that, like 20-10 or something like that. I think it's possible.
So I went with Virginia Tech 31, Boston College 17, and that smells like I'm expecting BC to turn it over deep in their territory, and that could be the difference.
David goes 26-13, Virginia Tech. He says, I think the Hokies run the ball effectively and go ahead early, giving themselves a buffer and some breathing room defensively for the rest of the game and win by two scores. So similar to Chris's explanation. The fans were right again last week by a slim margin of just 13 votes. The fans picked the Hokies to win by 1-10, and that was the case. So fans are now 6-2. They've been right three straight games. David 6-2, Will and Chris both 5-3. And an early check on the poll so far, overwhelmingly the fans thinking Virginia Tech's going to win.
Yes, let's see. That is 88% of the fans thinking Virginia Tech's going to win. 39% the Hokies win by 11 plus, and 49% they win by 1-10.
And then only two voters decided to be contrarians and pick BC to win by 11.
A couple of Boston College fans have wandered into the poll.
Yeah.
So that's really the first time in a few weeks we've seen Hokies fans be overwhelmingly positive, which at least through 400 votes, probably about a quarter of what's going to be done, but still. Let's check in with the YouTube. Katie, any good questions in the chat today?
It'll be short and sweet today. Scott Glessner says, is there a reason that Virginia Tech has gone away from last-second defensive line shifts before the snap, or is that just not something Jay Hamm probably is worrying about?
You know, that they haven't done that as much in a long time. That was much more prevalent in the 90s, to be honest with you, when almost everybody used man-blocking schemes.
Yep, that's right.
It doesn't – these days, almost everybody's – doing zone blocking and things like that. You're more likely to see that against a team that is more likely to do man blocking. Zone blocking is like you're just blocking whoever's in your area. You're not assigned a specific man. When Tech would shift their defensive line before the snap back in the day, it was to throw the offensive lineman off, and they had to really think quickly, okay, now that this guy switched gaps, which of these guys do I have to block? And at that point, the ball is snapped, and they might not have any idea what to do because they hadn't had a chance to process it in their heads yet. So the advent of zone blocking throughout college football has made pre-snap shifts a little less likely these days.
So who really started using zone blocking? Who was the forerunner in that?
I don't know. I mean, I know in the NFL, the late 90s Broncos teams.
That much I know, too, but I don't know who started it. But,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I remember reading an article way back then about the Broncos doing that, and they had a great running game. Terrell Davis, is that who ran for him back then?
Yeah, exactly. They did the mile high salute and everything, I remember. I remember being taught to zone block in high school, but it didn't happen until like 1998. Like my freshman year, we had no zone blocking at all. It was all man blocking.
Yeah.
1998, we were taught the very basic concepts of it, which is right around the time the Broncos were really making it famous in the NFL.
So I'm guessing that line shifts, if you've seen them more recently, have been about maybe shifting the alignment of the defense, not necessarily trying to, like maybe you take a guy from this A gap over here to this A gap over here.
And you
right
shift a linebacker too, and it could be more about getting the offense to change their play call based on your alignment than it would be about
getting
just
them
trying
to stand up and look at the sideline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The first thing I think of when I think of the late defensive line shifts, I don't know if you saw this, it was probably 2 years ago. I'll leave a word out here, but Baker Mayfield, the Jaguars line all shifts over at the last second. Baker Mayfield goes, "That was cute, guys," and then he snaps the ball. And I left a word out there, but always funny.
And then last one from Sam Sweeney. With recruiting improved this year and Tierlink and others just recently hired, do you think their best recruiting years are still ahead of them if staff is kept intact?
I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, he's made some good recruiting hires. I think I wish they'd been able to retain Tapp because he was really good at it. But I think Ryan Smith's an excellent recruiter. I think he's the best recruiter here. If he stays here long enough, I think he'll be considered Virginia Tech's best recruiter since Jim Cavanaugh.
Well, the commitments of Ramon Brown and Gunnar Givens this year are big.
They're
both top 10 guys.
Yeah, I think Jock Tyler's done a really good job in Northern Virginia, I think. And Justin Hamilton, I think, is a strong recruiter. So I think this current staff and its current iteration is Justin Fuente's strongest recruiting staff as a whole.
That's it.
All we got. All right. Well, thank you for everybody who dropped a question, and thank you, Katie. Before we get out of here, I do want to mention Boston College – we're sending our football team up there. They're sending their football team down here tonight.
That's right.
First round of the ACC tournament, 7 o'clock at Thompson Field.
And unfortunately, that won't be on the ACC network. They're showing, I think, Wake Forest and somebody else. But I'm sure it's on streaming.
I believe it'll be on ACC Network Extra. Yeah. I want to say Bailey Angle is calling it. I want to say Bailey Angle. Could be Evan, though.
It'll be decent weather. It'll be chilly, but like the wind's not blowing at all right now. So it should be like pretty good November weather for Blacksburg.
Those young people can run longer and even more than they usually do, right?
Hokies are trying to bounce back. Strong start to the year. They've lost their last 3 ACC games. So.
ACC's a rough league, man.
It is. It is.
Brutal.
They lost to Pitt 4-1 in their season finale. But still, with the way the ACC scheduling is, they're going to make the NCAA tournament just
because
their strength of schedule is so strong.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will get out of here on episode 205. First, Chris, preview's already up. Anything else coming up before game time on Tech Side?
I'm going to write a basketball column tomorrow. Switch gears a little bit. Thoughts on the basketball season and everything like that. I will try to get a Q&A done by Friday, but with the short week, we'll see.
And we are also going to do some basketball during Monday's podcast, right?
Yes. So David just finished up his preview as well on the or at least part 3 of his preview just
about posted. Yeah, it's a 3-part series. Yeah.
And then we will we're going to do, I believe, half and half on Monday's podcast. So we'll recap Boston College, and then we'll dive into basketball season, which will start the next day. 6 days from today, basketball will be played in Blacksburg. So
that's awesome.
Lots to look forward to. Doubleheader next Tuesday. Women facing Davidson at 5. Men facing Maine at 8. So
both those games streaming.
Both of those are streaming. ACC Network Extra, I believe. And then after that, Crosstown Rivalry, Virginia Tech Radford on the 15th, I believe, is the next men's basketball game.
We just got a text from David. Let's see if it's important. He says, "No Mario Kendricks this weekend either. Dislocated shoulder, apparently. I don't know where David gets this.
Is that a rumor?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but
Murray did get helped off.
He only played about 15
snaps.
With a
shoulder issue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we'll find out.
Well,
we'll find out this weekend if David's injury news is legit. Yeah,
we need. So that just means Josh Fuga is going to
Josh
have to step
Fuga. Up. Yes, we need David to be. He can be like our Adam Schefter. Just text us during the podcast if he has any scoops or something like that.
Right.
Well, that's going to do it here on episode 205 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, looking at Virginia Tech's trip down to up to Boston College this weekend to face the Eagles on Friday night. I want to thank everybody on set. Will Stewart across the way, founder and general manager at TechSideline.com. Find him at Will Stewart TSL on Twitter. Chris Coleman to my left, lead analyst and columnist of Tech Sideline. I'm not giving him your job quite yet. At Chris Coleman TSL on Twitter. Katie Adams in the fourth chair always does a great job. Katie Six Adams on Twitter. Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes. I'm Jake Lyman, your host. Signing off. Enjoy the game, Hokies fans, and have a great weekend.